From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
I'm Nishat Solomon.
I'm Paresh Masuria.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show that takes you inside Microsoft and inside Windows. We're very excited this week. We've got Nishat and Paresh here from our OS kernel, OSG kernel team.
Yes.
The core team that's they're responsible
for. The guts
for
of
the
Windows.
Guts, the internals of Windows.
We are the guys that are running under the hood trying to keep things running. So
yes,
that's us.
The true heroes.
And I have to say, every time I've worked with the kernel team, the developers there, like, they know their stuff. You got to be good to get on the kernel team. So we're very lucky to have these guys here. Nishat, can you just give us like a quick 30-second bio?
Sure. I'm Nishat Solomon. I'm the program manager lead on the kernel team. My team owns power management in the operating system.
Awesome.
So we work with silicon partners, OEMs, on building new and exciting systems, advancing the model for like how do we do power management, how do users do standby, hibernate, all the technologies that tries to save your battery.
Yeah.
We kind of work on these technologies and advance them as computing advances. So
that's awesome. This is the kind of stuff that's really pushing the bar forward for Windows. Like, everybody wants more battery life, and this is...
It's how you get from 8 hours to 10 hours to 12 hours.
We're working on it. Actually, the other interesting angle of what we're trying to do is we're trying to get more ambient computing in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional Windows model where you get your laptop, your X1 Carbon, perfectly fine machine, but the moment you close the lid, nothing happens.
Yeah.
It just becomes a paperweight. Mm. And it doesn't do anything for you. And we're trying to think of like how do we even evolve standby beyond that so that all this computing power sitting on your desk can just come to life, can do things for you, can help you remember things, do more. And that's basically what we're trying to do here.
Awesome. Right. Paresh, can you give us a little quick bio?
Sure.
Quick
intro? I'm Nishat's counterpart on the development side. Yeah. So kernel power is what my team owns. We actually do the real work.
Yeah.
Tends to just like talk about these things.
You got your hands in the code.
So, you know, as Nishat said, you know, we do a lot of the low-level functional kind of fundamental changes, whether it's processor power management, device power management, platform power management.
Totally.
How all that stuff goes up and down the stack is everything within our team.
Very cool.
Great, yeah. And you guys are going to show us some stuff about Power Config and Sleep Study.
Yeah, you know, Chad, I've been watching your video about like PowerCFG tools, and you guys mentioned a lot of the cool stuff that's in this tool.
Yeah.
This tool is like the Swiss Army knife of your, like, you know, power management.
It totally is. And people can go back and watch that video.
Yeah, you should watch that video again. It's really a good video.
Oh, well, thank you. I kind of winged
it. If you go there, you'll find if you go there, you'll find that there's lots of interesting things that went into this tool, and that's just one more of these interesting things that went in that. I'm going to open an administrative command window and basically launch this simple command called sleep study.
Sleep study.
Some magic is going to happen.
Awesome.
Now, let me tell you, before I show you that magic, let me tell you what that magic is about.
Okay.
So, as I was telling you, we're looking at innovative ways where we can reimagine what standby means.
Right.
And part of that was going away from the old S3 model that was invented back in 1997. When they're starting to think about like putting batteries on desktops and calling them laptops,
right.
Into the modern era, like the mobile era, the ultra mobile era. And the difference in the model there is the OS actually tries to continue running, but do absolutely minimal things
right.
when you're on battery. And so then when you connect it to AC, we can start doing more for you.
So the classic example is the lid's closed, but you know what? The heart's still alive if it wants to be. Screen's off. You know, lids are off,
yes,
but the hearts are still alive.
And this is really the modern kind of way of looking at devices. Like, that's what everyone's phone does, right? Mm-hmm. So we want PCs to do that too.
Yeah, and to give you actually that the like kind of like room analogy. So if you think of the room analogy, like the original power management model was everybody will walk out of the room and then some guy will own turning off the light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that guy will just own turning off the light. He'll be the master switch. And he will be the only guy that can turn on the light.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, that was firmware.
Right.
So from an OS perspective, we kind of like lose touch of everything that's happening.
Right.
And we depend on the firmware to bring the machine back to life.
And it wasn't just the light. It was the TV and the radio and everything.
He's the guy that had the circuit breaker.
Yeah, that's true.
Now imagine we go back into a little bit more refrigerated, flexible model,
mm-hmm.
where kind of everybody owns turning himself down when he's not doing anything.
Right.
So the TV is not doing anything, turns itself off. This light bulb is not doing anything, but this light bulb is doing something, then this light bulb turns off, saves a little bit of power,
right.
That one continues to provide value.
It's
that kind of like, exactly, fine-grained, more federated, but at the same time, more exciting and more efficient.
I mean, you also get power savings across the board. You're not just talking about when the system's off.
Right, that's a great point.
The screen's on, something's not doing work, why not turn it off? Why not save more power there, right?
Yeah, I mean, we always kind of had that idle screen off thing, but I think we've gotten much, much more sophisticated over the years about the number of things we can turn off or even reduce power to but leave on and things like that. Right?
I think it was Windows 7 where core packing was introduced, where you have two or three CPUs and they go, well, you're not even using 100% of one CPU, so why do I leave four turned on?
Yep,
exactly.
Let's just turn those guys off, let them go into deep, deep sleep, no wattage going through these guys, and this guy over here can take the load. And in fact, even if it gets to 110%, let's just run that a little bit late because it's worth it to save that battery.
Right. Only power up what you need, right? Yeah. Otherwise, save the rest of it.
Right.
Awesome. So was this new model, which was Modern Standby, came that interesting problem where people turn off their machines, close the lid, and things are happening, but they don't know what's happening. And then they see the effect, battery drain.
Yeah.
The other interesting challenge, again, as we were shifting an industry that's been doing something since 1997 into something different, there's just new problems that are showing up.
Right.
And we needed the debug tools that will help people kind of figure out what's wrong with their systems as they're building it, but also help the users understand what's happening in their like life.
So this is like the classic problem that everyone's probably had, like, you pull your phone out that's been sitting in your pocket for 5 hours and the battery is suddenly at 20% and you go, why? What happened?
What happened to my battery? Exactly.
Right.
That is exactly the problem that Sleep Study tries to solve.
Awesome.
Very lightweight tracing running in the background. Doesn't impact your battery life.
Yeah, that was chicken and egg thing.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Very lightweight tracing happening, recording all the important events, and then at any moment in time, you can go to the command window and say, give me a report of what was happening.
Yep. Great.
The very interesting secret to Sleep Study is it can record up to 28 days. So I can actually go and say, duration, 10.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There you go.
I learned
that is
something.
A little kept secret.
Oh, awesome. Very cool.
So now I have like 10 days history of what was happening on my machine. Mm-hmm. I can basically go and launch that HTML file.
So you should never say that a kernel guy can't do nice UI.
This is you, huh?
Now you get some basic information about your system, what's happening with it, and you get some graphs that visually tells you what was your draining, and then the table format that we always like, which tells you like each entry what was happening. So when you go look at this table, you'll find the classic like headings that tells you this is a start time, this is a duration, this is how much energy you lost, as a percentage of your battery, how much energy is that. And then the key metric that we always look at is a change rate. Mm-hmm. It's like how fast you are draining battery.
Mm.
We have charge sessions where you're charging your battery. We have drain sessions where you're draining your battery.
Just to point again, each session here is when the screen turns off and it turns back on.
It's a transition state, right?
Right.
Yes.
This does not cover screen on cases.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Right. So we're looking
at so it's like open the lid, close the lid, open the lid, close the lid.
Right. So every time you press the power button in your system and it goes off, we start. Yeah. Right? When you come back on, you want to know what happened? That's the end of the session.
Ah, okay.
The lid, the bar button, walk away from your machine.
Yep.
So each one of these lines is one of those periods where it was basically in connected standby or modern standby.
So you might have been working at your desk for 2 hours, and then you walked away for 20 minutes, walked for 14 minutes, walked away, whatever the number is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Now they're color-coded, it looks like.
They're color-coded.
Is red good?
No, it's actually, it's an interesting aspect of the color-coding where we color-coded it based on drain, but that our sizing doesn't always fit all the machines.
Mm.
So most of the time, I would encourage people to not look at the color-coding as much as really try and look at like these numbers, which are the more relevant numbers. It's like the percentage of the time that we spent in low-power state.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Now, the interesting aspect about this new mechanism, this new world, is we're not really forcefully turning off the light on anybody. There is a lot more collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So the software has its piece, where we kind of decide that we're done, and then the hardware needs to do its piece and basically turn off things when they're not in use.
Think of it as a waterfall model, right? As each thing finishes, the next piece takes over.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where you see like the two percentages, where like 91% of the time the software was doing nothing, and then 90% of the time the hardware was like, okay, we're like in low power state.
That's cool.
That's kind of like how you read numbers like this.
And would you ever see a disparity between those last two columns where one's like a huge number, one's a low number?
You would, and this would be actually good indication for a problem that a hardware engineer usually would look at, or a firmware mismatch, an issue that basically is very helpful in debugging. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm going to walk you guys through a bunch of scenarios that this thing helped me with.
Great.
But before we do that, let's just look at the anatomy of the report a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is this table that gives you like the summary, so you can kind of quickly zoom in on like the time that you had a problem. And then when you click on that summary, you'd get like the drill down of what was happening at that time. And here we have a header that just provides you as a summary. We have one of those like nice curves that tells you how long were you asleep for.
Yeah.
So going back into the mental model where we're waking up every little time to do a little bit of work based on events that are happening, whether it's coming from your network, coming from your Bluetooth adapter, or coming from even a piece of software timer, this is how often we stayed in sleep. So most of the time we're staying asleep for 32 seconds at a time.
So you could say maybe predominantly you ping the network for mail every 30 seconds or whatever you're pinging it for.
Something was happening.
Some event every 32 seconds.
Some event is happening every 32 seconds. So if you're looking for optimization opportunity as a hardware engineer, I would go and try and figure out what's happening at 32 seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do I have a rogue driver?
Right.
Do I have a piece of software that's trying to do something? And track down that piece of software.
Can I push it out to 1 minute? Can I push it out to 5 minutes?
Actually,
does timer coalescing kind of work in here? Is this how the...
Coalescing is working?
Yeah. Mm. So basically, when we believe that all software activity, important software activities have completed, we'll then go off and say all non-critical timers now are going to be pushed out. So that's timer coalescing.
Yeah.
And that's how we're able to achieve the 16-minute and 30-minute residencies.
Yeah. So to summarize timer coalescing, let's say you have two people who are 10 seconds. And one person says, I'm going to start the timer at 0 seconds. So he's going to want to be woken up in 10 seconds from now. And let's say someone else says, I want also a 10-second window, but it just so happens that they start at 3 seconds. So for them, they want to be woke up at 13. Because the durations are the same, we coalesce them into the same period, and maybe that 0 guy now actually is considered to start at 3, and they will both be woken up at 13. So now you have this beautiful 10-second or 10 blah window where you are asleep, and you're not causing this fragmentation of the timers, maybe is the way of saying it?
Yeah, excessive wakes on the processor just to handle those fragmented timers.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So, and once again, that was introduced Windows 7.
It was in Windows 7. The model here is taking that one step further, right? We're down where the system is in an off state to the user. We want to be a little bit more aggressive, so we'll be aggressive about pushing those coalesce timers even further out, right?
More variance on there.
Right.
Yep.
And just to kind of define a term here, it says percent time spent in drips. That's deepest runtime idle. Help me out.
Yes.
Platform something. Platform state. There we go. Okay. So that higher percentage of drips is better because that means you're in the lowest possible power state. Okay.
When we came up with the name, we didn't realize that it would have a life of its own. there are some regrets about it, but it is what stuck. So
it is what
we have drips today.
So if you take an average system, where is this histogram going to hit on most systems?
The histogram, again, there is the ideal system, and there is the practical limitations of what people build.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, it should be 60 minutes plus.
Huh?
From an OS hygiene, like of a stock image, that's what you get. But then you start adding different drivers and software and devices, and there could be things that require more frequent attention.
Gotcha.
The other factor to that is what's happening on your network. I mean, you're getting a ton of mail. You're getting a ton of IM messages. You're in the middle of an IM conversation, and you keep getting like IM messages, somebody's binging you all the time.
Always pushes, yeah.
That's always going to affect that. So, but from a capabilities perspective, you should be shooting, as an hardware engineer, you should be shooting to get in the 16 minutes as much as possible.
Oh, that high. That's really cool.
Yeah. That, from an OS perspective, we actually did a bunch of good work to try and push all work and coalesce it as far as possible.
Yeah.
All right. So most of the wake-ups here are usually hardware interrupts coming in from devices, whether it's not a great network connection or you're actually getting IMs, push notifications coming in directly.
You can probably separate into data and environmental factors.
Sure. Yes.
One's more of a usage thing, is what you expect of it, and one's just noise on the network that needs to be mitigated.
Right, and network's just one example, right? Yeah. You could have a device that's just generating spurious interrupts.
Yeah.
You know, the hardware engineer's like, my histogram's all the way to the left, I'm getting an interrupt every 50 milliseconds. What's going on? Something's wrong.
I remember I had a certain video card, I won't say who, that When it was at 61 degrees Celsius, it was fine. When it was at 63 degrees Celsius, it was fine. When it was at 62, interrupt storm. And so that's an example of of something that's stopping you from getting to sleep.
They probably had a sensor set at 62 degrees.
Good old speed fan to the rescue. I turned the fan off, let it go hot, and then it never was an issue.
Fire enough and interrupt.
Wow. We have these three dots that give you like a bunch of expert information, and that just gives you a bunch of details about how you entered into that standby session, how are you exiting this, how did you exit the standby session, your latency in turning it on, a bunch of like interesting diagnostics information that we use a lot actually to try and help people that have problems. Most users would actually not really get enough interesting information from this.
Cool.
And as we go down, we find that what we call the top offender list. So as I told you guys, we have this concept of like the software is doing its thing.
Yeah.
So we have a very interesting accounting system where we kind of keep track of who's doing work and how long they're doing work. And we plug this into that lightweight tracing. We also plug in device information. And we collect this data when we exit. We use that data to build this report. So this is basically a view into our accounting ledger. What was happening? There was some BI work, the OMA.
So BI stands for?
Background infrastructure.
Yeah. BI is basically your proxy for all modern applications. And so say your mail is running a background task.
Well, backgroundtask.exe. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Right. So basically this BI entity is the one that's brokering that.
Gotcha. Mm.
Right, so it keeps various system resources up so that task can run. And then when that task is complete, that broker then drops those system resources.
Gotcha.
We have that DM client, which is Intune device management. As you can imagine, I'm domain joined. The IT admins are doing some fun work on my machine.
Yeah.
The cool thing again is like again, I know we view this as a tax, but I would honestly say it's better that they're doing this in standby when I'm not using the machine than trying to do it while I'm trying to use the machine.
That's true.
So in that sense, that's actually good. I'm not complaining about that because I know that they're gonna do it either way.
Yeah. Might as well be when you're not using
it. We've been known to point out MSIT's failings before.
Yeah, we have. I've had people from MSIT complain to me about that.
We're running a bit of a debug and diagnostic. I'm running a big diagnostic driver on the system that's giving me even additional information about what's happening with my system. So there's that interesting tab that tells me more. I'm running a special, again, engineering system that has an energy meter chip in it, which is the one that Jorge talked about in the energy metering interface.
So we
pull data from that interface as well.
Right,
and we provide it here.
That ups the accuracy of the data that we get because it's hardware monitoring.
It's hardware monitoring, exactly. Mm-hmm. So because I'm running an engineering system, I'm getting a bunch of these experimental drivers, and I'm getting some extra information plugged in, which is actually super interesting for like hardware engineers, people that are trying to build systems. Mm-hmm. They have these tools that are like always running, super lightweight, so they don't have to worry about reproducing the problem. If the problem happened, they can go back and look at what was going on.
Yeah,
we use it in particular when there are no software visible entities blocking the system from getting the drips. We're actually there, but power is still fairly high. Mm. Where's that power going, right? Those energy meters kind of give us a hint. Oh, okay, it's actually being sunk by this line over here.
Cool.
And then something's up there, right?
That's great. And that's where that chip helps you on the development
system. Exactly.
That's good. We occasionally get partners, OEMs, asking about that, so that's great information for them.
I mean, the alternative would be have a very expensive instrumented board, which is, you know, I need to have a reproducible scenario, et cetera. It's just time consuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me actually walk you guys through an interesting scenario that happened to me. I don't know if you know what that is. This is a WinTV live TV adapter.
Right, yeah, the old.
I don't know if you remember these. These are like the old video capture
things. Exactly. This is how you're going to get your VCR tapes.
You know exactly what happened to me. My wife was bugging me about like getting our wedding tapes from VHS into like the digital world.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like paying somebody to do it, so I decided to do it myself.
You're pretty crusty, actually, yeah.
So now we know how old you are.
We're all
that
seasoned.
Well seasoned, I would say.
Yeah.
So I got one of these, and I was like happily working on that problem. And then I forgot it in my machine. It was just hanging off the USB port.
Plugged in, sure.
And plugged in, my machine idled out, and things were like happening.
Right.
Now I assumed that my machine would go into standby.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, screen turned off, nothing is happening, things should be quiet. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case though. What I learned is this particular device, because it's old, the driver for it does not do runtime power management. So it's not one of those smart things that realize I'm not doing something, I am going to turn off.
Right. So that power reaction or callback system relies on the driver to have that implemented.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And look at it this way, that the SOC can't turn off, or the SOC can't turn off until all components on the SOC have properly saved their state. That includes the USB host controller.
Okay.
The USB host controller can't turn off power to all its downstream devices unless they've saved their state. An indication to the host controller is that, hey, I am now at lower power. I've saved my state. I'm in select suspend.
There's no default yes. It's a default no.
And in this case, this guy doesn't support that. So we have to default to saying, he's not in the right state for us to pull.
And we won't take the risk we might cause data loss.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So in that particular case, actually, I was able to go back and look at this report and be like, okay, I see that USB was up, the XHCI controller was up for most of the time that we were up. We got zero software drips.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Okay, from the CPU perspective, we were not ready. Now, the magic thing that happens here for the software drips, which is actually super interesting, is we have a scorecard. We kind of create that pre-flight checklist of here are all the things that we need to turn off before, from our perspective as an operating system, we can say we entered the lowest power state. This checklist is stored in firmware. It's communicated to the OS via firmware interface. So any system builder will build that checklist, and as long as they build it correctly, we have an accurate view of what needs to happen. For us, that checklist told us that we needed USB.
Mm-hmm.
And we were up all the time waiting on USB. And that's where our accounting books were saying, oh, USB's up, USB's still up, USB's still up.
I see.
If the checklist is not correct, you're not looking, right?
Ah, okay.
So that's actually one of the interesting problems that happens during engineering.
There could be cases where something's keeping the system up and you don't see it in the report.
Well, you will see it in the report, but it's somewhat hidden. You remember those two numbers we had at the top, the software and hardware drips?
Yeah. Ah.
So we believe we've covered all the prerequisites for software drips. That ends up becoming very high. But hey, the SOC's actually not going down. And that's where you see that divergence.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So that's where the question earlier about where you'd see those numbers,
yes.
big differences.
Exactly.
And then you could rely on the hardware thermal chip to get you that last step, in theory?
Well, you rely on it to actually have it. At the end of the day, the hardware has the ultimate checklist.
Yeah.
Right. The hardware is built with that checklist hard-coded in it. So it will not go down without everything being satisfied.
Yeah.
The question is, how does it inform the software that this is happening? And that's the part that the firmware interface helps with. Nice. But if it's wrong, it doesn't.
It's wrong, yeah.
And this is something that's in like an ACPI table or something?
It's an ACPI table, exactly.
Okay.
Yes. So I walked down from here. I was like, okay, the USB is up, so something was plugged in. Now, at that moment, I don't think I had the memory of like what was going on, what was plugged in. So the cool thing here is we actually have the ability to even drill down and say, okay, what was plugged into USB? It was the rooftop, of course.
This is kind of a device tree. Hub.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It works a device tree and it tells you exactly what was plugged in.
I see. We're basically looking at device manager here in a way.
Well, exactly. Sort of. Right? This is your device tree, but it's also accommodating how long each individual device was blocking, right? So you'll notice that this other USB device is green. It wasn't blocking for that long. Mm-hmm. So that's probably not the real culprit.
Yeah, so you're getting a tributation as well as
yes,
the tree.
Exactly.
I see. Okay.
So now that I know that this is the guy that was a problem, the magic would happen if I go to Device Manager and figure out
what it is, and you can
what is a friendly name.
It's your video capture device.
My video capture device, yes.
And the good thing with the tree is you could, in Device Manager, you bring up the device view, so it defaults to a like categorization normally.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You can go view and say via connection, and then you can follow the tree down, which would be the same tree
as
this.
Exactly the same as this.
Yeah,
exactly. So that was actually one of the interesting problems that I found out using Sleep Study.
So how do you know it's the driver's fault or something else? Is it, that's just the fact of it? If it's bright red and not going to sleep and it should, you just say it's the driver's fault?
Well, in the case of USB, we know that if a child device is up, that guarantees that the parent device is not going to go down as well.
Yeah.
And we know that the XHCI controller is a direct blocker of getting into drips. But that's how we're able to attribute it. We do have all the accounting under the covers to say that this device is not in the right power state, and then we can walk that all the way back up.
So if you saw this on your own system, you would go down to it, find the device like you have in the report, jump across to Device Manager, follow the same tree down, and then maybe go update driver, search for new drivers.
Update driver, yes. You know, we have various other tools in the system. Let me preface a different talk. powerconfig/energy. Mm-hmm. If you run that, it goes off and checks whether all your USB devices are actually operating correctly. And one of the criteria would be select to suspend is support on this device or not.
And it'll flag it.
And it'll flag it accordingly, right?
Cool.
But ideally, yes, you'd update the driver or you just pull the device out.
Yeah.
Right?
If an updated driver is not available.
Yes.
And you're able to go down.
And assuming the device isn't.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right.
Now, on the motherboard, that actually becomes an interesting problem. It's usually a problem for the system integrator.
Yeah.
Where now they know, before they ship the system out, what drivers do they need to fix or what devices do they need to select differently.
Or incur the wrath of consumers.
Yeah. Or incur, yes. Or exactly, deal with the support calls. But yes, that is exactly true.
Cool.
So that was actually one interesting problem that I as we talked about shooting this video, I was like, wow,
perfect.
This happened to me, man.
Yeah, so that's great.
It's like a case of the unexplained type
of situation. The real world examples are perfect.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, the other interesting case that we actually notice and see a lot for like normal users is you'd have that case where you have a piece of software that's running on your machine. Mm-hmm. And that piece of software is trying to do something, trying to finish a task. The interesting thing is we have a primitive in the operating system that allows software to say, I need the system to be up. I think you talked about that one when you touched on parsefg/requests.
Yeah.
That's how your PowerPoint would keep your screen up, how video would keep your screen up.
Exactly.
Not all software does that, though. It's interesting. I learned that the hard way. I have this popular gaming platform that when I ask it to download my games, it doesn't actually take power requests. Mm. So what I did for that particular game, like I like to play FIFA, and it's like a 15 gig download, so I was like downloading that game, and I had to disable sleep, like go to the sleep timeout settings.
Because it would just go to sleep on
you. It would just go to sleep, and the download will never complete.
You never get the download.
Yeah, and I didn't have AC at the time, so I was like, okay, I need this download to complete. I'm just gonna go to sleep settings and change that to like, you know, an hour.
High performance, whatever it is, or
Either
change the profile or change the number.
It was easy for me to just go change the timer, like don't sleep for an hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, after the download is complete, I forgot about that setting.
Oh. Why does my computer never go to sleep?
Wow. You technically don't see it because the screen turns off.
Screen turns off, you don't know. Yeah.
But you don't know that it didn't go to sleep.
Yeah.
So I was like stuck into these cases where like, okay, my machine is just not going to sleep as it should. And it was one of those sessions that I had this this problem, and I was trying to figure it out. And it was, it was this case, basically. I just ended up setting it to, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, let's go up to the summary numbers up here. You'll see that software drips was 27%.
Yeah.
20% of that entire screen off session, we were not going into a low power state.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, right. Well, that's sort of, okay. Because the screen probably turns off before we try to go into standby.
Right. It's you know, we call like standby technically when the screen turns off, but we won't actually go into lower steps of standby or quiesce functionality because you've said, hey, don't pull functionality out from under the rug, right?
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
So if you're doing that download in the background, sure, turn the screen off, but keep the download going.
Right.
Well, the common wisdom around display is 60% of your power consumption go through display. Mm. So, I mean, do I want you to be there wiggling the mouse while waiting for the download to complete?
No.
I don't.
And I think the last 30% of the brightness isn't 30% of the battery. It's like way more. Like that last 30% actually costs you way more.
Yeah, so it's exponential.
It's a hockey stick.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's a hockey stick.
You actually want to be like at 70% max. Is really.
Well, that's why we have the ambient light control.
Yeah.
That definitely helps a lot with that.
Right. Yeah.
But that's true. So anyway, I was just ended up running with this configuration for a while, and I was stuck, and I was getting poor battery life, and I didn't know why. And then I was like, okay, yeah, there's that no CS phase; it's not even entering standby.
Right.
And I go there, and it says, oh, it's waiting for sleep timeout.
Oh,
because my sleep timeout.
You crank the timeout.
I crank the timeout.
Right.
So now I know what to go fix. I just go back and.
We tried to make these names very self-explanatory. So
you're an idiot.
Oh, man. I tried. You said no. So.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want you to tell me I'm an idiot. I might say it to myself, but there's something about a web browser telling me I'm an idiot.
Maybe remember what you did last week?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, but that was an interesting thing. Now. since we are on the topic of pull requests, I mean, one of the interesting things that we try and do with pull requests is we try and allow software the opportunity to run once we turn off the display. But we also try and limit that to a certain reasonable time. So today we have logic and modern standby that says that if you're taking a pull request, we'll give you 5 minutes on battery. We'll allow you to do what you want on AC, but we'll only give you 5 minutes on battery. And one of the interesting cases that allow you to find that out is if you go to your sleep study. Like if you had a piece of software that was blocking sleep because it was trying to do work, you can go to your sleep study and you'll find that you're staying in that phase, the DAM phase, which is a desktop activity phase for roughly the 5 minutes.
Oh, I see a 459 there.
Yes.
So this is essentially desktop applications, legacy applications.
Yep.
Win32.
Yes. that was running on my desk.
Want to do something.
I was trying to do something. And I was like, okay, you only get 5 minutes and then...
And then it's, we're shutting you down.
We're trying to save the battery.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So there's a bunch of actually lots of interesting things that you can find in Sleep Study. We have a blog post online that tells people more about how to read it. So
Yeah,
I would encourage you guys to look at it.
Yeah. Put a link to it in the notes below our video.
Yep.
Great.
Okay.
Well, this is very cool stuff. Now, this sleep study, just to make sure people understand, this is really only going to be usable on modern standby systems. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
You don't get anything here with. So if people run this and they on their system and it doesn't.
You're saying my Pentium 2 won't get these benefits?
You won't get any.
If you don't get it, then remember that other command that Chad talked about last video?
Yeah.
Power TFG/A.
Right. Which is the old school stuff.
What do I have as abilities?
S3 sleep. Like we did in 1997.
Exactly.
So the sleep, 1997. Talking about the switches, when was the sleep study switch added to PowerCFG? What OS was it?
Windows 8.1, I'm going to say.
And has, I'm assuming the functionality may have been beefed up a little bit.
Oh, certainly, yes.
But it started in 8.1.
Right, yeah, I mean, so we revamped the design over time, made it more efficient, et cetera. I mean, prior to 8.1, we would basically be analyzing these traces on our own, right?
Yeah. Right.
We'd see a problem, it'd be reported to us, so like, please, can you reproduce the problem? We'd buy a bunch of pizza for all the developers and have them go at it and figure out what was going on, right? And that didn't scale very well.
Yeah.
Now we've enabled all our OEMs, our partners, et cetera, to be able to go do all this stuff on their own.
Under the hood, is this ETW-based?
This is ETW-based.
So you could capture the provider and
you could,
intermix it with other stuff.
The schema is difficult to understand. So really the best way to kind of analyze the stuff would be sleep study.
But maybe it could give you a nice little diamond point of a start.
Yes.
More of a time period thing rather than
if you wanted a timeline view, you could open up DTL.
Yeah, you could get that period and then maybe swipe over it and look at the DPCs that are firing and stuff like that.
Definitely.
I mean usually if you're gonna do tracing actually, the information here is providers that are already enabled. Mm-hmm. So if you're gonna start a trace, then you can start trace with the providers and you get the same level of information, same level of verbosity in WPA.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so you just use like the standard WPR profile, like?
Power, the WPR power, it will actually give you everything that you see here in the WPA environment. The problem that we tried to solve with sleep study though is something slightly different, which is you're not able to reproduce a problem. Something happened.
Yeah.
Right. And you're looking at it from
days away.
Days away. Yeah. So if you think about the way we actually, the interesting thing is I remember the slide deck that we built to our management trying to convince them that we need to build this.
Yeah.
We used the flight recorder analogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, black box.
Yeah,
you can take the airplane and like, you know, let's reproduce that.
Let's find out what happened in the last 28 days instead of what we can do now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. Great. Perfect. Well, that's really cool stuff, and I think that this is something that people who have connected standby, I keep saying that, that's the old name, modern standby systems can definitely look at this and get a good glimpse of you know what's taking up their battery when they turn the thing turn it off. And I think a lot of our hardware partners, OEMs and people building these systems, this is a super great tool for them too to optimize that.
And particularly I think the home builder too, like if you're building your own PC, your big gaming rig for yourself, and you're putting esoteric drivers and stuff on, you can tweak it and work out where you are.
Yeah.
Are there home-built systems that do modern standby?
I'm just more in general, power usage, right, and everything else. Yeah.
We're working on that.
Yes. We're working on it.
There aren't any today, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
We hope.
Dev's going to be potentially some interesting things on the horizon.
I'm honestly saying, I think for the industry, the PC just needs to evolve. The PC that just...
Yeah. That componentized PC needs to evolve.
The PC just needs to evolve.
It's definitely the direction that the industry is heading. So this is going to become more and more of a thing, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Because if you think about it, like the next time you want your kitchen PC to continue to do something for you, you just have to disable power management completely.
Yeah.
You have to keep all the lights on. All the lights on so you can get any little function out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, that seems very wasteful.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I mean, we've got things like Wake On Voice for the Xbox, so I'm looking for, hoping to see more of that coming to Windows, too.
I'm sure more will come.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nishat and Paresh for coming and showing us. That's pretty awesome stuff. And as always, if you have questions or comments, put them in the show notes. Or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com and we'll answer it or get these guys to answer
it. We'll forward it.
we'll forward it to them.
We love feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks. Thank you.